It's the last week of 2018 as we wrap up the year that was in Wisconsin sports. We'll look back on probably the three biggest stories in the landscape. Jason Kidd getting fired, Mike McCarthy getting fired, and of course the Brewers making it all the way to Game 7 of the National League Championship Series. Feel free to tweet at us at Mitch Ross MKE and at SnowTapWI with your best and worst of 2018. Welcome into another edition of Tapping the Keg Podcast, episode 318, as we wrap up the year that was 2018 here on the Snow Tap Network. First, we'll get started right away, take you back to January of 2018, as the Milwaukee Bucks go ahead and fire Jason Kidd after a mediocre start to what was supposed to be a good season.
Monday afternoon, Jason Kidd gets fired. There are literally breaking news NBA stories all over the place. It is wild.
It's wild, yeah. And I mean, do you think the Bucks planned it that way?
About to fire him before the
Well, because it was just weird to fire him right before a game.
Yes, that was strange. But I think our friend and former host Noel Murphy made the comment that the Cavs did that before a game, and then they had like 3 days off. So I think a part of it was the 3 days off, so that when the team came in to work today and did light workout, light stretching, that Prunty was the front and center. And It wasn't like they had to react to coaching change. They already did that. They've already gone through it. It was a normal day besides their coach getting fired.
Yeah.
So now they start afresh today, and then in practice on Wednesday and Thursday. And today is probably the day where we could expect to hear from Giannis, as I would imagine the Bucks are practicing and Giannis would practice obviously battling some knee soreness, but
he's supposed to be back. So,
but yes, and the plan, I think, to have Giannis not be there, I think I wrote this, I think, on Monday, but I really start to believe that Wes Edens got a final look at Kidd's roster, Kidd himself, on Saturday night,
yep.
And he basically made the call then. And when they fell apart in the fourth quarter, he's like, okay, John, go ahead. Pull the trigger. Let's talk a little bit about it on Sunday, but let's make a decision on Monday and go forward. You're right. And yep. this is the move that needs to be made.
Yeah, it's shocking. I mean, I don't know. You know, it was just kind of like, what? You know, type of thing. Like, wow, I can't believe they did it. You
right.
know, I kind of thought that, as much as everybody saw and as much of kind of as a punchline Jason Kidd had become this season,
yep,
with definitely in Milwaukee, and it was becoming it was getting to the point where everyone NBA, every NBA Twitter, everybody knew he was a bad coach.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be holding the team back, and they weren't responding to him. And even himself, he was saying weird things. That game on Wednesday after the Miami game, where he said, there's pretty much nothing I can do anymore. That he must have known. He must have had a really good idea at that point.
So, do you buy into the kind of conspiracy theory that Kidd was trying to get himself fired? That
maybe.
Kidd sabotaged
Honestly, maybe.
His job for the last 3 weeks. Like,
I don't think anything could be thrown out with Jason Kidd.
Right. Bart Winkler of 105.7 The Fan asked that to Gary Wolfel, and Gary said that's out there. I mean, so and that is. I think you're right. Anything with Jason Kidd, because Jason Kidd's been known to go off the radar. He's a sneaky loose cannon in NBA history of doing just bizarre shit that doesn't make sense. He's burned bridges everywhere he's went.
Yep.
That's why we're getting the Jason Kidd rehab tour in the next coming days. Of that, a lot of national media is going to paint the picture that Bucks were dysfunctional. Now, I think the Bucks did a good job of getting out to Sports Illustrated and saying, like, hey, look, we thought about firing this guy at the end of last season. We
yeah.
thought about just washing our hands.
Well, if you remember, I know Brian Windhorst did have that right after the season
right.
last year, that, you know, keep an eye out that Jason Kidd could be, he's not necessarily comfortable.
So let's maybe go back to that moment and think about how the GM search ended muddy. And let me just provide an alternate theory, alternate reality. Could it have been that they were going to hire Justin Zanuck, but Justin Zanuck said, I'm not taking this job unless Jason Kidd's not the coach.
Yep.
And they just couldn't part ways.
They weren't ready to lose to
and
get rid
Zanuck's
of him yet.
Like, fuck it, I'm out. I don't want to deal with this. And that's how they ended up to Horst, because Zanuck was their guy 100% all the way. and he maybe came in last minute. Maybe originally he had said, yeah, I'm going to work with Jason. I can't make any promises. I have some reservations. And then realized, like, no, I don't want Jason's paws anywhere near this. Screw this guy. I want to do my own thing.
Yeah, that could have been what it was.
I literally pulled that from my brain, like, and just thought about it because it sort of makes sense now. If you start to piece this together,
the timeline, yeah,
it's one big puzzle, and it's like, and figure out little intricacies of that is perfect, and that could explain. And I think John Horst has done a fine job. I mean, jury's still out; he has a long way to go.
Yeah,
but fact of the matter is you know, that kind of started it. And then you're like, okay, Kid, is Kid going to be the mouthpiece still? And some of the moves made by John Horst, like getting rid of Gary Payton and getting rid of DeAndre Liggins as guys that became Kid guys, were, you know, I thought were really telling about John Horst trying to gain that power struggle. And I think he got it at the end of the day.
I think if anything, this shows more competence to the Bucks organization.
Yes.
Than probably we've seen in a year.
Absolutely.
The last calendar year or so, you know, that it shows that John Horst does have some power. I thought I saw somewhere that Hammond made sure it was worked into Horst's contract where he had some power. You know what I mean?
Right.
And who knows? Horst seems to have been making the right moves so far. The Bledsoe trade has obviously worked out. He's been good. And then you find out that, you know, he had the quote before Monday night's game that if something's inevitable, why wait? Which means that means that, and I know he also did say that it wasn't premeditated and all that. It kind of came quickly, but I don't know if I believe that. I mean, I think your Zanuck theory is probably certainly possible, plausible for sure. He probably, you know, said all the right things all the way, and then when push came to shove, he was like, I'm not dealing with this guy, and the Bucks upper management just wasn't, you know, the obviously the ownership group wasn't ready to part ways with Jason yet. Horst, they obviously pulled Horst from, you know, the low levels of the front office, and Horst, you know, agreed to go on with it. And I'm sure that as the season went on, as the wheels started to fall off a bit, you know, they haven't played very well lately. No. The last January's been rough.
They haven't won back-to-back games since December 28th and December 29th.
Right.
They haven't won three straight games since early December.
Yeah. So they've been wildly inconsistent, losing to some teams ahead. I think as this month has gone on, and probably since Christmas, you know, that's when things started to heat up underneath Jason Kidd. Excuse me. So, and then finally, like you said, I think that was good. I thought of that too. Edens was at the game Saturday. They interviewed him on TV, and, you know, he got a front row seat to another, you know, lackluster game where
they put 14 points up in the fourth quarter. And that's the other thing. It's like, just things weren't changing. Nothing was making an adjustment. I actually thought this was great. And I don't think Stan Johnson, Marquette's head assistant coach, this was not a shot at Kidd. He kind of just does quotes, you know, kind of what coaches do on Twitter. Yeah. But he had this. Great teams and organizations reach their potential because the leader has a growth mindset. In parentheses, they pull for all their players / employees, but allow competition to determine who gets what. Poor teams have a fixed mindset. Leader determines who gets what, regardless of production and potential. And I'm like, that's exactly what happened with the Bucks. They had a fixed mindset. Jason Kidd did not let anyone get in his way. And then I provided this theory, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on Daily Tap on Monday. Guys can go back and listen to it, or Tuesday, excuse me. I said that the whole thing with Jabari Parker, whether it was fractured, whether it was not, that I think there was a legit worry from Horst that Kidd was going to bury Parker on the bench and Parker was only going to get 15 minutes, and that Horst would A, not have a good evaluation of Parker, but B, he would, you know, drive Jabari away from this organization.
Which there's obviously plenty of, I don't know if there's really reports, but there's a lot of speculation that Jabari, especially without getting the contract extension, that he was a little, you know, turned off by the organization type of thing. There was some stuff came out that he, you know, was back home in Chicago for, you know, the first half of the season, not really talking to anybody, But I mean, to me, that's kind of to be expected when you're when you can't even shoot a basketball yet.
Being with his family, I think that's making it's this classic Buck fan paranoia,
right? And he's a little bit kind of disengaged as a person,
right?
He comes off that way anyway,
yeah.
That he's just kind of aloof,
right?
And you know, so I don't know how much I read into that, but obviously, I think that this does mean that Jabari Parker is probably more in the Bucks' future plans than we probably had originally anticipated.
That's a great point.
So because clearly, if that is true, to get rid of Kidd means you want Jabari's best interests for him.
Right. So. And to say that, I think you can still be cool with somebody and behind his back be like, fuck this guy. I don't want to fucking play with him. I don't want to work with him. He's an asshole. Like, that happens in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
You
I mean, these are human beings. You know, people tend to forget that.
Right, exactly. Absolutely. You see somebody at the bar, and you might dap them up and be like, oh, hey, what's up, man? But then they leave the bar, or you go to another bar, and you're like, God, that person's a prick.
Can't
like,
believe I saw that guy.
Yeah, oh, you're like, yeah, man, wow. Of course, classic so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Classic Brad.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then, you know, I'm sure that more leaks will come out, and you've already heard enough stuff, too, that Jason Kidd is... you know, was arrogant. And there was, you know, Woj had that right away, I guess, after his tweet about the firing was that there was some just, some general just disconnect between him and ownership and, you know, players and everything. So
right. The fraying of the relationship.
And certainly him not getting any front office power this offseason, I think showed that the disconnect was beginning or well underway at that point because, you know, this time last year, we were sitting here probably saying, well, I don't mind Jason Kidd. I know we were saying this. I don't mind Jason Kidd as the coach as long as he's not getting his grubby mitts all over the player personnel.
Right. Exactly.
And now, you know, looking back on it, that probably was the case.
Right. Oh,
and,
yeah.
I Absolutely. Mean, where would we be if it weren't for Jason Kidd? Probably have Bobby Portis, right?
Yeah.
Probably have, you know, maybe not DJ Wilson.
Yes.
We don't know.
So the other part of this.
But now I think that there's going to be. At least for this season, for this upcoming trade deadline, we hope there's going to be a little more of a lateral, you know, alignment in the front office and ownership. And because, you know, Joe Prunty's not going to, you know, swing his dick
right.
on player person. He's just going to come do his job, coach. That's what he knows how to do.
And I think the thing with Prunty is he is from San Antonio. You know, I heard today that someone called him a kid clone, and I think that is not accurate at all.
No.
I think that is far from accurate. I know San Antonio is dealing with their own shit, but I guarantee you Pruntney's reached out to Greg Popovich and said, and Brett Brown and a couple of the other guys who have Spurs background be like, hey, what do you think? What would you do with this team? How would you address this roster? What type of things were you seeing? You know, we saw some little things. I mean, the fact that Thon Maker only got 9 minutes and my new favorite player, Marshall Plumlee,
he's just so goofy.
Yeah, but he's different than the other Plumlee. I don't think people realize that like he was like a ROTC guy. Like Miles is a fuck up. Like Miles just goes out and gets drunk and hangs out and just lives the life. Like you know, Marshall's kind of like a serious dude. And he means business.
Oh, he's out there. He's not fucking around when he's out there.
No, exactly.
Question. That's obvious.
Which is
kind of what the Bucks needed.
Absolutely they needed. So I don't know if he's like the solution, but he's a nice guy. So back to Prunty. You know, I think he's going to just do his job, and I think there are going to be different things, and I do think he's going to play around with some things. I think you're going to see some Rashad Vaughn minutes. I think you're going to see some Sean Kilpatrick minutes. I think Prunty's going to know who he has. I think I did worry, like, I was like, whoa, Jason Terry got 13 minutes, but I think it's a guy you're comfortable with, and it was a no Giannis situation.
Yeah.
And the fact that Malcolm Brogdon felt confident enough to just have a day.
He was amazing.
Yeah, best, and
that's like the best game he's ever played.
And so you wonder about the whole kid thing. About
I mean, he scored 32. He shut down Devin Booker.
And
I mean,
he only shot the ball 13 times.
Wow.
So
a lot of free throws.
Right, but that's an incredible line.
Mm-hmm.
And he had I think 10 in the fourth quarter. So Malcolm Brogdon felt more comfortable the first game that kid wasn't there. And he works with Prunty a lot. They have a really good relationship. So he felt confident that he wasn't taking shots that he shouldn't or that he was going to get berated for. And it's clear to me that was there.
Yeah, I think that's the case too, that Malcolm, something was going on with Kidd, I think, and maybe the whole trade and everything. Maybe he thought Kidd was trying to trade him.
Or maybe that kid never consoled him, never got him on, just said deal with it and go forward, instead of like pulling him aside and like being like, hey, look, you're still the rookie of the year. You're still one of our core players. We just need to add help in the perimeter. It's going to take us a while. It just seemed like kid was an asshole all the time.
Yeah.
He didn't seem like he had a compassionate bone in his body. He was okay to work with Giannis, but it was just about basketball things. You never heard one player say, Jason Kidd taught me any life skills.
Right.
And you think about all these young guys, and how did he not teach any life skills? Now, granted, is he the type of guy to teach about life skills as someone who adds domestic violence and he's cheated on his wives? Should he be one to talk about that stuff?
No.
Not really. But still, you can still be a sage older person and provide insight to somebody younger, even if you've had past transgressions.
Yeah, he's, I mean, not necessarily the type to do that. He's, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't.
You know, and I just would like to see Malcolm be able to, you know, be freed.
Yeah, I think he has. And can I?
Because he's such a good player. Like, I mean, it's, you know, if there's honestly one guy besides Giannis that I want here long term, I think it's probably Malcolm Brogdon.
Right, because he's he does it all in the court. We talk about it in baseball, and we'll talk about a 5-tool player later. He's a 5-tool player.
Right, he's 6'5". Wingspan. He's almost redefined his body.
Yeah, like he put on a ton of muscle since
the open scrimmage in October, first weekend of October, he looked different. Like he looked like he had worked on his body in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he can shoot. I know his 3-pointer disappeared a little bit for a while, but it seems to be coming back around. But he's still a threat on the court to shoot. So I mean, if there's, you know, obviously Middleton, you know, he's fine, whatever. He's kind of an empty stats kind of guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Bledsoe, I think Bledsoe does a lot of gritty stuff, but he's older, and you never know what his situation will be.
He has some injury stuff, too.
Sure. And matter of fact, I'm surprised he hasn't sat any games.
Yeah, we'll do a little knock on wood there.
Yeah, right.
So,
no kidding.
So I did want to offer something about the front office, not to take us back on that topic, but a kind of an interesting, and you can tell me if it's a stretch, if it's a reach. But have you noticed that Mark Lazary has really been nowhere to be seen?
Yeah, I've noticed that. I think it's because of the way the offseason was.
Oh, see,
where because it came out that, you know, 5 years Eden's is supposed to have the team, 5 years somebody else, and then 5 years the other guy or something like that. They're supposed to be the main, because the NBA mandates you have like the majority owner, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, we're taking turns. So I think it's Eden's turn.
So,
Lazary has kind of fucked off.
All right. So that's one side of it. My take would have been that he was implicated in the Harvey Weinstein lawsuit. That was a huge deal. He was on that board and he's taken a step back.
He's laying low.
He's laying low for those particular reasons.
That could be.
And so he's maybe less involved with the day-to-day, even more because of it. So add on the whole 5-year thing. And on top of it, he's like, right now is not time for me to be in the public eye. I don't want to answer questions about this. So I'm just gonna stay completely ground level. I'll let my kid do his thing, but that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, he can speak for me.
That could be. I mean, that's probably the other part of it. Yeah. I mean, honestly, anytime you're in the public eye, you're going to have a chance of, you know, getting run down for questioning and stuff like that.
And so maybe because he's not as connected anymore, like Kid and him were boys. And so now it's like he's hearing it all secondhand from Alex, from Wes, from Jamie. Like, and he's like, okay, yeah, go ahead. Do it.
He's like, you fired Kid?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He gets out of one of his high stakes.
And Alex is like, I just couldn't take these sons of bitches on Twitter anymore. Yeah.
I love that from our guy Eric, who's like, oh, now you can all change out of your weird avatars.
That's true. I was thinking about that today. We need to get that on shirts, though.
Get a fire.
Honestly, say this didn't happen.
Yeah.
It would have gotten to that point where there would have been a sect of Bucks fans that would have printed shirts and probably had filled up a whole section with those.
Yeah, we probably missed out on opportunity. We're not there yet from a merchandising standpoint. But at some point, I'd like to think that we'd be like Barstool and can flip around T-shirts. Because if this was Barstool, if Barstool had a Milwaukee section, they would have had a Fire Kid shirt out the minute that avatar came out. They would have had it on a T-shirt, and they would have sold a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'd be like, what do I do with this Fire Kid T-shirt after, like, 2 months. I guess it's still a keepsake.
Still just wear it to the gym and shit. I don't know.
Wear it to
open gym, wear it to pick up games.
So one guy we haven't really talked a ton about is Giannis, and I like to think that some of this stuff about him being devastated, some of this, it's all overblown. Yeah. I think it's just a classic.
I agree.
He's a star player who has the spotlight on him, so, and then Jason Kidd leaks his private conversation and it becomes a thing.
Yeah, and who knows how much truth there was in that conversation, too.
Right.
That's all Jay's part of the Jason Kidd media rehab tour.
Right.
And that was the beginning of it.
Absolutely. That was the launch, and it'll be very interesting to see what Giannis says today.
It's just like, you know, Giannis was, quote, devastated when Hammond left.
Yeah.
Because he was the first guy to draft him. Totally understandable, but, you know, time goes on, he'll get over it. And then he was devastated when they traded Michael Carter Williams. That was his boy. Well, but he knows this as well as you and I do that Michael Carter Williams sucks.
Right. Fake tough guy. First ever Snow Tap Daily Tap Fake Tough Guy Award.
Yeah.
We're taking nominations for this week. So.
Michael Carter Williams, not good.
Not good.
I think Giannis knows that.
Good.
And you can't tell me that he couldn't tell that Jason Kidd was had his bags packed.
Well, like, look at the Utah game. I mean, he got frustrated in the Utah game and gets mad at Sweeney because things weren't working.
Yeah.
And that was probably, I'm sure there are moments.
And I bet you he wanted to scream at Jason Kidd, but he didn't. He screamed at the assistant.
And if we're going to keep, like,
who is his, that's really his guy.
Right. And if we're going to keep puzzle piecing this season together, this whole timeline, Bucks get blown out in Miami, look like complete shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Giannis does it literally all by himself, gets 27-20 and gives this ray of light hope that says, okay, I did my part. Now you coach your part and you keep your job and we're good and mm-hmm. we can live this. Because the other part of this whole why it was done now, to bring it back to that, the Bucks have a very easy schedule upcoming. So if the Bucks got hot, you couldn't fire Kidd.
Yeah.
And then you're fucked. And then you're legitimately fucked. So the time was
now. Yeah, because then you would have been like, had 30 wins at the All-Star break, you would have been like 30 and, you know, 24 or 25 or something.
Yeah.
At the All-Star break, and then it would have been like, everything's okay, right? Yeah,
right.
I see what you're saying for sure there. So
yeah.
That does sort of... Well, I mean, I think that was part of the timeline.
Yeah.
Is that you get Prunty to do his thing and get his mark on this team. And they have, like you said, a pretty easy schedule the next couple of weeks to sort of get their feet underneath him. Maybe play some lesser opponents.
Right.
Get rolling.
Maybe actually beat Chicago. We'll be in the building.
Yes,
by
we
the
will
way.
Be. The Snowtap crew heading down to the United Center.
Snowtap goes to Chicago.
Yep.
Should be fun.
It will be fun. I'm pumped.
I am too.
I mean, I'm happy now. It honestly, it just like I was texting you this morning that my Bucks depression had really started, I think, at the Indy blowout.
Yeah.
Was it last Monday or 2 Mondays ago?
Yep.
Where they just were never in that game and just had never, they just were blown out from word one, you know,
yep.
in that game. And that's when it really, I mean, it was almost getting to the point here where it was like, I don't even want to watch a game. Just I need to just ignore a game and see what happens. And you know me, I can't.
Right.
So it's like, you know, and I hate to liken it to, but it's like being almost like a drug addict. It's like, you know, it's bad for you. You know, it hurts your personality, but you just can't stop, you know?
And it's like that with a lot of teams.
But
you
now
know?
It's like, I can at least be, I guess, happy watching a game.
There were those Brewer teams too, where it was like, how are they going to fuck this up? How are they going to screw this up tonight?
The Ken Maka years?
Yeah. The Ken Maka years, some of the Renicky stuff. I mean, it happens.
Fast forward a few months to December of 2018. Mike McCarthy gets fired after 13 seasons as the head man in Green Bay. Things have just not gone very well in the 2018 season for the Green Bay Packers, and they decide to part ways after they fall to the dismal Arizona Cardinals, who came in just 2-9, a warm weather team coming in to Lambeau Field. Obviously, one of those things where everybody kind of knew where they were when it happened, and it was kind of earth-shattering. This was recorded a couple of days after the move, so maybe more of a falling out type of discussion a little bit after the move broke, so not such an immediate gut punch, but after a couple of days of digesting, here's our discussion after Mike McCarthy was fired by the Packers.
Well, for me personally, I'm in a great mood because I love dysfunction. It's my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And it's rampant.
And in a way, You know, I can't remember. I think it was like 3 weeks ago I had said to you, maybe it was last week, and I was saying how you and I and other people who are kind of sports fans of Wisconsin sports, not just Packer fans, but because we've been through the Brewers, because we've been through the Bucks, we've sort of dealt with dysfunction, and this is nothing new. It's just new for the Packers.
Right.
And it's just new for the Packers. And so these Packer fans, these Wally Waukeshas, these Walter Wausaus of the world, I guess that's the same thing, Wally and Walter. Is that the same word? Yeah. No,
yeah,
Wallace.
It's
close. Walt Waukesha, let's just put it that way. You know, the, you know, Andy Ashwabadon.
that probably is someone's name.
Yeah, probably. Fuck me. Danny DePeer. Just
that for sure is.
Hey, come on down to Danny DePeer's. We got your boats. Get them now. Boats, boats, boats. But anyways, these guys haven't dealt with it. They just haven't been through the ringer of sort of dysfunction. And all of a sudden, the Packers and Bucks sort of blended as one. And the Bucks once famously left off the
win. The Packers have stooped to their level.
Once the Bucks at one point fell off the Wisconsin, those dumbass fucking logos back in the early early aughts.
It was 2011.
2011, yep. No horns were added. Now, recent ones, horns have been added. Those are still some of the most ugly fucking things that have ever been created on the face of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, here and over there. But yes, the Packers and the Bucks are now kind of one. Like, this was very much, if you really sort of look at this, it's kind of what happened with Jason Kidd. And it's kind of the same story. And it's different in why was there dysfunction. And, you know, for McCarthy, he overstayed his welcome. He should have just, they should have got rid of him after last season when Ted Thompson left. But that would have been too much change for the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
And that wouldn't really be the Packer way.
Which is,
I'm making quotation marks.
I know. And
for those
and,
who we don't have a live stream here.
It was funny to hear a friend of the podcast, Seth, trash the Packer way.
Right.
The other night. Because it was just like 2 years ago. Or you know, or less, you probably would have not said that. And now it's like all of a sudden the Packer way is bullshit. Okay.
Well, I think just we kind of say, what has it got you, right? What is it? What is it sort of? And maybe that's Mark Murphy's frustration.
Again, a couple years ago, it's the Packer way. We can bring whoever, like we're the Patriots. We can bring whoever in. And if, you know, they'll just abide and you know, follow the way of the Packers. And, you know, you're not seeing that right now. I mean,
and I've tried to, I podcast on Tuesday, make sense of Mark Murphy. And I've started to become, I'm not a pro Mark Murphy guy, but I'm starting to try to figure out what Mark Murphy is doing. I'm trying to play chess while everybody else is playing checkers. The easy way, not to be a dick,
I know,
but the easy way for people to go is fuck Mark Murphy. Mark Murphy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's Herb Cole, which is something I said. And then our friend Eric kind of talked me off that ledge.
Since you brought that up, I mean, Herb Cole did it for 30 years.
Right.
And this is 1 year of essentially, you know, 1.5 years.
But I think that a lot of people are like, is this the future Ball? You know, is this the future? You know, is he becoming the Bruce Allen of the Packers? Bruce Allen has led a decade of dysfunction for the Washington Redskins. So is that what's becoming? Is he a Jerry Jones? You know what I mean? I think there are a lot of people who are scared of the future.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I'm kind of going into this.
I just think
this,
it's way too small of a sample.
100%. And that's what I sort of said. And I said it's also like literally there's been a murderer's row of guys we can blame. And every one of them, not to be morbid, but every one of them is dead. So you have Ted Thompson, gone.
Right.
Mike McCarthy, gone. Dom Capers, gone. Who is left?
Aaron Rodgers and Mark Murphy.
That's it. Exactly. So it's the easy route to just immediately say, fuck this guy, instead of being like, taking that other side of it. I'm not going all
in.
Go
to the next level.
Right. Exactly. Which is
get
what
get to the secondary.
Exactly. But that's what we try to do on this podcast. Is what we try to do on our blog is like
try to find the crease.
Exactly. And that's it. Exactly.
Find
it.
The daylight and go toward it.
And right. And I'm 100%. And
put
I love
points on the board.
You're greasing my tires, and I fucking love you for that. Because this is exactly what I'm trying to get at is let's not let's not look at it like I'm not saying I'm not in my bag for Mark Murphy, but I'm also not going to be completely against him. I'm going to try to just take my time with it and not just immediately develop a take and try to assess everything. And I do think it's interesting that certain journalists, like we saw with the Bucks, similar, are starting to cape for guys. Yep. Jim Caldwell got suggested like by multiple people. What the fuck are we doing here? And then Jason LaCanfora, who I'm not a fan of, I can put that out there in the space. LaCanfora, national writer for CBS, said Pat Fitzgerald was the only guy to take the Packers to the promised land. Okay, so he explains why Fitzgerald would be a good fit. He's worked this turnaround, whole thing, yada, yada. Forgets two things. Number one, guess who Fitzgerald's agent is? Bob Harlan's kid. Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Mark Murphy hired him at Northwestern when Murphy was the AD. So, and he doesn't mention this in his post, in his column. How do you forget that? How do you just leave that out there? Because it's driven by the agent. His agent and Fitzgerald's people are driving this.
Trying to become the head coach of the Packers.
And they're making him unattainable, saying, oh, he'd never leave Northwestern. And, oh, he'd never. He's Northwestern for life.
And I guess my response to that is, what the fuck has Pat Fitzgerald done? He's gone 8-4 a few times at Northwestern. And I know that they have limitations, probably worse than much worse than the Badgers.
Yeah, I mean, he's been wildly successful. I mean, he's 75-30, but the point remains with Pat Fitzgerald is he said RPOs are communist. Like, that is not really today's NFL. I'm sorry.
Everybody does RPOs.
Exactly. And everything is updated in advance. Pat Fitzgerald is still running an offense from the might. You don't take a step forward with Pat Fitzgerald running your team, nor do you with like a Jim Harbaugh, who I can't believe that is even being floated out there.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, the Harbaugh boys do nothing for me. I just don't see it with those guys. I think Harbaugh's kind of a college. Jim Harbaugh is a college coach, so he's stuck at Michigan, losing two games a year.
Yep.
They're never going to win a championship with him, but they can't fire him.
No,
they'll be good enough. I mean, eventually, 15 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, Harbaugh might decide at some point, you know, if the Colts are rolling right now, but if there's an opportunity for a job where it opens up there, where it makes sense for him to go back to the NFL, I think he would, but he needs a lot of control.
I think Bruce Arians would have been perfect, and I know he's now shot down everything, basically, way. And it stinks because I think that is kind of the guy. I think I'm on board with the Godfather type coach, if you will. Like a Bruce Arians. I guess Jim Caldwell would probably fall in that category.
Come on.
And then you get like the hotshot offensive coordinator.
All right. So let me ask you then.
If you
want the Godfather, do you want Nick Saban? Nick Saban's 67. He's a year older than Arians. Do you want Nick Saban to coach Packers?
You got me by the balls here.
I do have you by the balls.
I hate Nick Saban, but I like the idea of it, kind of.
Okay. He gets
people to play, doesn't he?
He does. Ah, man.
Him and Rodgers would be fucking insane.
Uh-huh. Do you want to talk about dysfunction? That, to me, is setting up for failure because I poked a lot of holes in Jonathan Jones's column on SoTap WI. It's a website basically explaining how there's no way the Packers would give Nick Saban $10 million.
Yeah.
They said out in the article.
Well, what's he up to at Alabama? Got to be around there.
Yeah. That they would give him $10 million. And I'm like, the Green Bay Packers? Are we talking about the same Packers team? Yeah. Like, I'm not saying they're cheap.
The team with no owner?
I'm not saying they're cheap, but like the teams that I would see offering a $10 million contract, Dallas, Washington. And that's who I pointed him. I'm like, Washington has like half of Alabama's defense on their roster already. They have a hard on for Alabama as is. They just play in a shitty fucking stadium, and you know, so they probably aren't desirable.
Washington?
Yeah.
I think that stadium's only like 20 years old.
Yeah, but nobody goes there.
They have a terrible owner.
Terrible owner. They are in a place where it's far away. It's in Landover, Maryland. Nobody can get to it. It's a mess to get there from a traffic perspective.
They traded Kirk Cousins, who's better than Alex Smith, and locked Alex Smith up.
I don't know. Are we sure Kirk Cousins is good, though?
I mean, no. But I mean, Kirk Alex Cousins Smith is again.
Kirk Cousins is an average quarterback.
Right. And so is Alex Smith.
Right. And I'm not convinced.
Marginally
that,
better.
I'm not convinced that the Vikings will make the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying the Packers will make it. I'm not even going down that route. But if you're telling me, would I be shocked if the Vikings are 7-8 when one? Not really.
Carolina's falling apart.
They are. And it might even be the Eagles. I don't know.
That's the whole funny thing going back to the Packers is, I mean, they had a gift given to them on Sunday.
Yeah.
And they couldn't take advantage.
I think that.
I think the kiss of death for McCarthy was when he said he doesn't know what the hell he's going to do.
I think that
Mark
was
Murphy
it.
Probably heard that and he was like, this dude's done.
Yeah, he's given up. He thought everybody quit on him, and so now we need a fresh start. Let me ask you, if, say, Carolina would have won, say even the Vikings would have been on their way to winning, because he fired him before the game was over.
Yeah.
Do you think Murphy may have had a second thought of this and, like, made him less mad and been like, all right, well, we're kind of fucked, and any which way, we're probably not going to make the playoffs? Because weirdly enough, even though they lost, that door is still kind of open. There is a way.
Yeah.
And the Bears losing also, you know, the division.
So the firing may jumpstart the team?
Yeah, but I don't want to make the playoffs. I'd rather be a top 15 draft pick.
What are you, 11th pick right now?
10th.
10th?
Yeah.
It's getting better.
Right. It's like, I know.
You're so close to Ed Oliver, Chuck.
I know. The Ed Oliver thing is real, and
he'd look pretty nice next to Kenny Clark.
Sure would. Ed Oliver, Mike Daniels, and Kenny Clark is like the drooling emoji, which usually is for sex, but for this, we'll make it for just drooling because that would be an absolute wet dream. Even if Ed Oliver is a little bit of a hothead, that's okay. That's fine.
Well, I mean, you could use somebody like that.
No,
I mean,
exactly.
You really could.
Absolutely. And like,
enough of this fucking Packer way stuff.
I even looked at like Devin White from LSU, who is like the Butkus Award winner. He's kind of a good dude, but he's not going to get drafted till mid round, probably more like 2021. But mock drafts are all over the place right now because I think it's kind of a guessing game. We have to see how these guys do in combines. We have to see what the needs really are. Like,
well, you won't see him in bowl games.
Oh, well, yeah. And I don't really have a problem with that. I think.
I don't either.
I think, you know, make your money, you know, get that. Like, yeah, you're not really turning your back on your team. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to do this for you guys. Like, fuck you. Like, it's not turning your back. You're just trying to make money. It's a business decision. Is anyone really going to criticize somebody for making that sort of business decision?
Yeah. Do you think any of those players really care whether or not they win the, you know, Cracker Jack Bowl?
It only becomes a big deal if it's like the college football playoff.
Right.
If someone were to say, I'm going to skip, like Nick Bosa kind of did and said, I was going to skip the year, and Ohio State had a reasonable shot to get into the playoff, and he got hurt and was like, you know what? I'm not even going to risk it coming back. I'm just going to train with my brother. But I do think the Bosa boys are weird dudes in general. There are some screws loose.
They're the Watt brothers on steroids.
They're the waspy versions of the Watt brothers.
They are like the anti-Watt brothers.
Because they have a lot of money.
Right.
And so they don't really need it. They don't really need football. They could retire tomorrow and mommy and daddy are taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the silver spoon Watts.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and not that JJ is really a blue collar person. He's from fucking Pewaukee, but still, he's at least a hard worker and isn't someone that's going to stir the pot like Joey or Nick.
Yeah, he comes from modest. I mean,
upper middle class,
right?
So, and moving it back to the Packers, since we're just rolling down a rabbit hole, but that's what we do here. You know. The coaching carousel is going to be fascinating. It's going to be all over the place. We're going to hear rumors literally they're going to wait for a while. Like you just said it before we started. You're like, this is going to be a 6-week topic. And it is. I mean, today Winston Moss tweeted some reckless stuff, was basically like the Lombardi standard. And because he put number 12 in that tweet, everybody lost their mind when he got fired. And in my opinion, it was a good move by Joe Philbin. Joe Philbin saw insubordination. Joe Philbin saw a guy who could potentially leak things out to the media, saw a guy who might have been upset that he didn't get the head coaching job because he's interviewed for defensive coordinators.
And I looked at it, and he is the associate head coach.
Right.
So theoretically, if something should happen to the head coach, he moves in there. I did think of that. People were talking about him. You know, I think it was Monday, and I'm like, yeah, why didn't he?
Yeah, and so he was, you know, why wouldn't he be the sort of, co-coach or whatever? And it's obvious he had some screws loose and they got rid of him. And I think the other part of it is he has a direct line to McCarthy. He's been McCarthy's boy. He's been with him for all 13 years.
Yeah.
There is no reason why you should keep him on staff if you're worried that he's going to start leaking things out to the media.
And right. And in his exact position, I mean, that he coaches has not been good either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, see ya.
Later. Yeah, we don't need you. If you're going to talk shit, if you're
going to
run.
Does he not coach pass rush?
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
I mean, I know they have good sack numbers, but, I mean, the guys, you're getting nothing from Nick Perry.
It's not consistent.
Clay Matthews. Yeah, I mean, Kyler Fackrell had a couple good games.
The only guy that's sort of developed has been Kyler Fackrell and a little bit of Reggie Gilbert, but how much of that is God-given? How much of that is, you know, them just be growing into their bodies a little more? Then it's not really coaching development. You don't see it. From, you know, Clay Matthews in learning new moves. Nick Perry's been a ghost. And so, yeah, it's see you later. I'm trying to think back, like, when is it ever a good idea to tweet as a coach? I mean, would that ever be a good idea? Even player
off season, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But even then, like, that's a weird move, man. And they basically were like, and he's a weird dude. Like, he had that whole issue with the media.
That could have been part of it.
And I think it was. And that's what Joe Philbin said. I think the guy probably had a three strike rule. And I think he ran out of strike three. And that was like, all right, one more thing and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one more thing. And it was like, all right, bye. I wish they would have done that to Ron Zook, but I guess Ron Zook keeps getting jobs. So whatever. Not jobs, but the fact that he's still the special teams coach is unbelievable to me. They're so bad on special teams.
Yeah. J.K. Scott's been kind of...
It's not really J.K. Scott. It's like the penalties. It's like the returners. Now, granted, Jair Alexander actually looks pretty good at... That was like one of the
Wasn't it Alexander who returned the one where he let it go into the inside the five?
He did also make that mistake, but it was a youth... I mean, he did make a mistake, but like there... Ryan Wood, I thought, had one of the better quotes of the week saying that they looked like a distracted team, and that was the word that have stuck out to me more than anything else is, and I'm like, yeah, they've been distracted all year. And if you tie it back to what we talked about at the beginning about the Bucks, when the Bucks had Jason Kidd under the thumb for the first 3 months of the season, they played distracted. They played like turnovers. Well,
they didn't want to play for the guy anymore.
Right. And sometimes that's a combination of I don't want to play for him or I'm not going to give my 100% because I just don't want to. And I'm distracted. And why won't we just get a new coach?
Yeah.
And so I do think that, yes, Murphy should have gotten rid of McCarthy at the start of this before the season started. And I think there was justifiable cause to say, all right, we're starting brand new. We're getting in Brian Gutekunst. I'm going to make the hire. Brian's going to have input, just like he said now. And I don't think there is massive, you know, outrage. Of course, Bob McGinn said on the fan yesterday or day before that they should have hired John Dorsey, which I thought was ridiculous because John Dorsey has murdered caps. You know, like he is a cap space murderer. And I'm like, why the hell would you want John Dorsey running this program?
Plus, there's nobody left. Right from
well, this was before like Elliot Wolf and Highsmith. Okay. Like those guys would have
right, okay.
likely stayed.
So before they fired Ted or
right,
around then.
Right. But Elliot Wolf would have probably got a job elsewhere. I mean, or Gutekunst would have got a job elsewhere. And I think it goes back to Murphy got cucked by Ted Thompson and he didn't want to take it anymore. So he wants to get that he wants to balance that power a little bit more.
Then you have the whole Russ Ball thing.
Yeah, Russ Ball is an interesting one. Like, that's another guy who
You haven't heard his name at all.
He's kind of like, I don't know if I want to say he's like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. You won't understand that reference.
No.
But that's okay. Other people will. But like, where is Russ Ball in all this? Where is he? Is he just in...
Wasn't he the one that if if they hired him as GM, McCarthy was out?
Right.
Like he was
McCarthy and him did not get along but Russ Ball to me in the MMQB article that Kalen Crowler wrote last week had Ball was sort of the guy who like enforced like dress code, enforced like not wearing your hats backwards.
Russ Ball?
Yeah. That was
Russ
Ball. So
he'd come down to the locker room and just be a Nazi?
Yes. And so that part of it, I think that scared the Packers a little bit. But then my question is like, is that still going on even though Russ Ball is at a new position? Like, where is Russ Ball in all this? It's a great question. Is he just running numbers? Are we sure?
I doubt it.
That was his main job. He was the cap guy.
Yeah.
So is he running numbers? What is he doing for this team right now? And that's, I think, a valid question for where is Russ Ball in all of this? And that's a question I don't think Mark Murphy has been asked, has he?
Has anyone? I haven't heard his name come up at all. So.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going on there? Where is his involvement? Is he part of the? I'm sure Murphy will have a committee of people that interview coaches, and I'm sure Ball will be a part of that committee. Now, how much of his influence matters? Probably very little, but he's definitely a guy who will, I'm sure, have a seat at the table.
Yeah,
as they say in the business world.
There was interesting times in Packer land for sure. As we touched on a little bit there, treading in uncharted waters for Packer fans, no question about it, as they are eliminated from the playoffs and just kind of playing out the string here in 2018. We'll see what happens going forward. We'll finish on a high note. The Brewers win 96 games in the regular season. Finish in first place, win the National League Central Division. Ultimately would come up short, though, finishing just a game away from advancing to the World Series. And here was our discussion on the end of the Brewers' 2018 season.
But we're going to talk about another team in LA who ended the Brewers' season, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Mitch was on the podcast last week, and I asked him, I said, are we going to be talking about the Brewers on Tapping the Keg next week? And you said yes. And I felt good. I agreed with you. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. Game went 7. You know, I don't know if there's many regrets. I don't know if there's anything where you look back on it and you think what could have happened. Bill Simmons did bring up, and not that he's the bastion for NL baseball, but he didn't bring up, I don't understand why Craig Counsell didn't walk Cody Bellinger with Grandal on deck in game 4. And I didn't really think about that one. That didn't really stick with me, because I think it was so fucking late when game number 4. And then I was like, oh man. Yeah, if you would have walked Bellinger, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
still.
More recently, you know, game 7, he went to Hader a little early.
Yep.
But I think perhaps more importantly, you gave up on Chacín a little bit early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where like he was a guy that you rode him all year and he pitched some big games for you and well, and he gives up one home run and he's done.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think that has actually been a point that hasn't been made by a lot of people. A lot of people make the Jeremy Jeffers point. A lot of people make that Domingo Santana should have pinch hit in the second inning versus Jonathan Scope.
Yep.
But not a lot of people have made they gave up on Chacín too early. And I think you're right on that. I think there is reason to believe that he could have pitched 2 more innings. And maybe that's just the inexperience of a Game 7 manager. Craig Counsell hasn't been there. Dave Roberts has been there. Joe Maddon has been there. A.J. Hinch has been there, the Astros manager. Terry Francona, another example of a guy who's been there. And maybe just the moment got a little too big for Craig Counsell. I think that's okay to say. I've been very anti-Craig Counsell's kind of turned everything into gold. But, you know, look at Alex Cora last night in the World Series. He was like, yeah, we'd usually have Nunez face the lefty, but I had a feeling he could come up later on in the game. There could be a moment where he could fit in. And that's like next level thinking, right?
Yeah.
That you're anticipating the 7th or 8th inning where he could have a spot. And he did, and he homered, and he won the game. He essentially put the game out of reach for Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if the Dodgers they might win one, you think?
You know, I'm really mad at myself because I looked at the, like, odds for, like, 5 games, and the odds were actually really good, and I was too much of a pussy to bet them because I was like, that to me, I thought they were going to win in 5. I thought that, yeah. I said that last week.
I'd give the Dodgers one at home.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a warm weather team, and it's 40 degrees in Boston.
Yeah,
probably.
It is. I mean, it's definitely football weather.
And I was thinking, we'll get back to the Brewers in a second, and I was thinking about this, though. On the way in, you know, baseball kind of screwed up the TV stuff. You know what I mean? I know with the cold weather stuff, you can't push it off very long, but they probably should have started like Thursday, Friday, had Saturday off for the travel day, and then gone Sunday night again. Just for like, because that NLCS Game 7 was like the lowest rated playoff game in history.
Was it really?
Lowest rated championship Game 7, I believe, in playoff history.
I believe it.
And because it's Saturday night, 7 o'clock, one's watching TV.
Well, also too.
And it was on FS1.
It was on FS1, and on top of that, Ohio State was playing. If you looked at the college...
Who cares about TBS?
Is that Stephen A's...
Mad Dog or whatever.
Oh, Mad Dog.
That was a good rant.
Yeah. If you... sorry. You distract me with your Mad Dog impression. Ohio State has been 5 of the top 6 college football ratings. They're like the Cowboys.
Yep.
So you're going directly against Ohio State. You're also... going up against the West Coast in Oregon and Washington State. So you have the Pacific Northwest, who may have Dodger fans there. That's covered. So you basically have taken away two parts, like a Midwest, a lot of Ohio State fans. They might be Reds fans. They might be Pirates fans.
Cubs fans.
They might check on a Brewers-Dodgers game. But I think that... Major League Baseball has to have a come to Jesus moment with, we have to look at our schedule and build around college football. They did with the NFL. They're playing Tuesday, Wednesday because they have a Thursday night game on the broadcast. I mean, it's a pathetic game. It's Dolphins Texans, but they've avoided Thursday night specifically for that reason. Now, is Joe Buck going to go to Texas and call that game?
Probably.
Do we know? That's crazy. I couldn't believe that.
Somebody tweeted, I think it was right when the game started on Saturday. I think it was one of the Brewers Twitter guys. He's like, Joe Buck looks like a corpse. And I'm like, yeah, he's been on a hell of a run. He never responded, but Joe Buck has done he's probably worked every day the last 3 weeks.
Well, I don't understand it because if you've heard Buck on podcasts, Part of My Take, he's said this before, how miserable he was trying to do everything.
Yeah.
And he's like... So I don't know why he's pushing himself. It's maybe because Fox got all this money. Oh, I know. Mitch is making the money sign for those who are listening. But yeah, it is. It's totally the money.
He's probably paid per game. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm sure Thursday...
It's a lucrative paycheck.
And I'm sure the Thursday was a bump because Fox got NFL and they wanted to promote it as this is our thing. But they haven't been doing that many Sunday games. They haven't been doing as many Sunday games. Buck and Aikman have not been doing as many Sunday games since they've got I've noticed that.
Buck probably doesn't do Sunday, I guess.
He's not doing
Sunday
games.
He's probably excused from the Sunday games
Aikman isn't either. Both of them aren't doing Sunday games. I weirdly look at, I always kind of look who gets the Dick Stockton game now.
I'd be curious to see if you're right on that, because I bet you Aikman still does it.
If you go to the
they just have, it's probably Brenneman and Aikman. That's what it was in the past.
If you go to the506.com and you look through the last couple weeks, I think the last game that Buck and Aikman did was the Eagles-Vikings when that was on Fox. And I would assume, I doubt that they do Rams. They have primetime this week, and I don't know who's going to do Rams-Packers. It might be those two. It might just be... Kevin Burkhardt and Troy Aikman instead.
Tom Brenneman and Troy Aikman, Green Bay and Rams.
Okay. But if you go back, I don't think that they've... that right. sucks, too, because Tom Brenneman sucks. But...
God damn, I don't know how to go back.
You go... They have a scroll and they see different weeks.
Yeah.
Up at the top.
Trust me, I've used this site going back many years. It's a great site.
It's an amazing site. Who has the Dick Stockton game this week? I know it. San Francisco, Arizona.
Correct. Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Any game in Arizona, he must live. He has to live there.
No, he did Detroit, Miami last week.
Oh, wow.
Handsome son of a bitch.
How does he get all the exotic locations?
He hits the geriatric locations, Mitch.
The retirement communities?
Yes. Exactly. So trying to roll this all the way back to the Brewers because we strayed completely sideways. You know, it was an amazing season. I don't think it wasn't that much of a gut punch. It sucked. Like I got drunk. You and I both did. We got loose on Saturday night, I wasn't really that crushed. Night of it sucked. I was really mad, but I was mad during the game. I walked out, we were watching it together. I walked out after the Puig home run and just stood in the kitchen for a little while. Because I just didn't really want to watch.
Just had to be that asshole, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And if you remember, I'm sitting next to you and I said, anybody but Puig. And he hits a home run. And he hits a home run on a really tough pitch. And, you know, there was some talk.
Now everyone hates Jeremy Jeffers.
Yeah, and I don't get that. I'm glad you brought that up because I heard that on the radio today. And they were like, is he going to hit a wall like other Brewer relievers and stuff like that? And the Brewers have a long history of these relievers just sort of losing it. And I don't think that's the case. I think, as someone brought up, like, JJ pitched the most he's had all season, all his career. The guy was tired. I think his arm gave out, and he, being sort of the tough guy that he is and the emotional, and I think he sees himself as a leader. I think he is a leader. He didn't want to tell counsel, like, hey, look, my arm is fucked. Mm-hmm. Like, my arm, I wouldn't want to say it's dead, but it's like, I can't pitch the same way I did. I can't be in these high leverage situations. And so, because...
Well, and you're never going to say that. Oh, as
no.
That's not even an option.
You're never going to give up.
It has nothing to do with appeasing the fans. Your own pride, and you're playing for your team. I mean, you're never going to go to a manager and be like, I can't play.
Right. You know, and like, even in, like, say it's a little bit of a different situation, but like.
But then that goes on the manager a little bit more. To
right.
Be like, well,
yeah.
You know.
And Craig Counsell probably should have looked at it a little more and said.
He wanted to will JJ to being.
Yes.
What he was.
Yes.
And he gave him ample opportunity and probably too much opportunity.
But isn't that fitting for the season to end that way? Because how much leash did he give Matt Albers? How much leash did he give Dan Jennings? How much leash did he give Xavier Cedeno? He kept Chase Anderson in the rotation until, like, the very end of the year.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I guess was pissed that he got moved from the rotation. Did you catch that from David Stearns yesterday?
I caught the comment. He
said he had to mend fences. When you have to mend fences, that means
I missed that little.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I caught the answer I heard was, you know, very PC, like, Chase was obviously a little bit upset. I don't blame him.
But can I ask you, does Chase have the least amount of fucking self-awareness on the team?
There's got to be worse players than him on the team.
Maybe, but the guy gave up 30 fucking home runs this year, and you're pitching against...
In the playoff game.
You're pitching against a Rockies team who all they do is hit home runs, and their ballpark, if you did play two games there, is the biggest homer-friendly park in baseball. Then you play the Dodgers, who led the fucking league in home runs.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, how dense are you, Chase Anderson?
Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I mean.
And someone tweeted at
it'll
me.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. And there's a lot of question marks about this. Who's going to start or what they're going to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is that piggyback rotation thing that's been getting kind of thrown around.
And that I don't see as possible.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think they are going to go. I think Jimmy Nelson will be slow. It'll be a slow burn with Jimmy Nelson. I don't think Jimmy Nelson will start the year. I think maybe you even see him in the bullpen just to get him going. You know, one inning, two innings. Because I don't know if Jimmy Nelson can be a starter at this point. I think if you're to tell me rank the guys who are the most safe to least safe from the rotation standpoint, I think most safe is obviously Chassin. I think... Probably you have Freddie Peralta, I think, is pretty safe. I think Corbin Burns is pretty safe. I could even make a case that Brandon Woodruff is safe.
I think Woodruff has to be in there.
Yep.
I'm gonna break something if he's not.
Yeah, I do too.
I also Corbin Burns.
Yes.
Interesting, because I feel like probably this time last year we were sitting here saying, well, Josh Hader's gonna be a starter next year, right?
Yeah,
and then as the offseason went on, it kind of became more and more obvious that they were going to leave him in that role. And I know you don't need two of those guys.
It doesn't seem like Stearns is wavering from the fact that Burns is going to be a starter. Well, I think good. Burns
I hope
wants
so.
To be a starter.
I hope so.
He's said it, and he's dropped subtle hints like, I like pitching two or three innings because it makes me feel like a starter again. I think there is every intention to make him a starter this year. I think they basically said, we want to replicate the Josh Hader plan, but instead of keeping him in the bullpen, we actually want to see this to fruition. Like that happened with David Price, and like it's happened with Chris Sale. Like, There have been guys.
Adam Wainwright.
There have been guys who started in the pen. No, I think Burns has a chance to be a superstar next year. I think Burns is in that most safe. I actually think.
Just think, we could have traded Corbin Burns and Orlando Arcia for Manny Machado. And then some. And then where you'd be probably your two best contributors from the NLCS. Yeah. Two of your top five.
Machado would have been like Jack Parkman in Major League Two, where it's like he's still a prick. Mm-hmm. I think I never realized how much of a dickhead Manny Machado was until actually playing against him.
Usually what happens in a 7-game series, there's a lot of players, no matter what sport it is, and when it becomes an intense playoff game or intense atmosphere, Everything a player, an opposing player does pisses you off.
I realize this is a be careful what you wish for, but I'm going to say it anyways. Do you hope Manny Machado becomes a Chicago Cub or a St. Louis Cardinal?
Yeah.
I do too, because
he's going to be overpaid.
Yes.
Regardless. He's going to get at least $200 million.
Yeah.
I would say. Machado. Yeah. You know, around there, probably.
Whatever. Yeah, 200 baseball million. Contracts are
They're
going to
be, he's going to get a Pujols contract.
Yeah.
He's going to be locked up forever. He's probably going to deteriorate at some point. And then you have a person to fucking hate.
And also, he's
going to get booed viciously at Miller Park.
Imagine, I cannot think of a worse combination than Manny Machado and the St. Louis Cardinals fan base.
Yeah.
That is like oil and water.
I mean, they hit Dexter Fowler, and that dude's a saint.
Right, exactly. The hustle, I'm not Johnny Hustle. That does not play in St. Louis.
That is not Cardinal baseball.
That is not the Cardinal
way. They hate Marcelo Ozuna, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Because he wears a yellow arm sleeve.
Yeah, well, that's not the Cardinal way, Mitch.
I know.
If he's a Cub, that would be enemy number one.
That would be typical. They would just move on from Addison Russell.
They're definitely moving on from Addison Russell.
And, you know, of course, in typical Cubs luck, they don't even need him. So you get rid of him and you sign Manny Machado.
I talked to our token Cubs friend last weekend and he goes, well, I'd like Harper, but I guess Machado would be okay. Yeah, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I heard Harper once.
I think a lot of Cubs fans are sitting here today saying, we can get one of these guys, but who are we going to move? And maybe that's the logical ones.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the bandwagon. Well, ones are
I
saying,
think there
okay,
is some.
Want,
I think there is some worry that I don't know if they can sign Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. I think that's kind of a dirty little secret. Like Bryant turned down a
kind of like Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder.
A little bit. Bryant turned down a $200 million extension over like 3 weeks ago.
I heard that he turned down. I didn't hear the numbers, but
yeah, it was
turned
around
down $200 million. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Just I mean, whatever.
Move along. Yeah. I'll get $300.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Also, I wanted to mention when we were talking about starting pitching, I'm all in for Junior Guerra being a bullpen arm. I actually think Junior Guerra can be a pretty good bullpen pitcher.
Yeah.
I think Guerra,
if you let him wind it up for an inning.
Yeah.
He can throw a mid to upper 90s, I think.
Yeah,
and be effective. He's got a good splitter.
I have no idea what they do with Chase Anderson or Zach Davies. Those are to me two guys who are definitely on the proverbial trade block. And I don't know if they have any value because
That's the thing, right? Is like, what are you going to do with these guys?
Anderson is owed $18 million over the next 2 years, which I guess is a reasonable baseball contract these days. So maybe some team who's pinching pennies takes on the
like an Oakland Athletics or,
yeah maybe they take on the Anderson money and they say okay yeah we need starters. Kyle L, who does a great job, runs Brew Crew Brawl, pointed out that Broxton, Hauser, Santana, and Thames are all out of options, so those guys to me are those he said I'm guessing there'll be some movement with those guys. And he also said, for the record, I feel some kind of Sonny Gray trade is inevitable.
Yeah, that's possible too. And Sonny Gray could find himself, and then maybe you send back Chase or something.
Yeah,
to
maybe
the Yankees.
Maybe that's. I mean, to me, I've always thought Thames is a logical player for the Yankees, just because of the short porch.
Yeah,
and he's a perfect DH, and that the Yankees, you know, granted they have enough power, but you never know.
Do like Thames, Chase Anderson, and Scope.
Maybe. I don't know if you need that much, but Scope was another guy that I guess could fit for the Yankees because Gregorius, I think Didi's out for a little while. I forget what they were talking about, but no, maybe he's not. I don't know. Regardless.
They might need
Didi,
infield.
He might be a free agent. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Whatever. Fuck it. But no, I'm looking forward to next season. I realize that it's hard to emulate you know, what happened this year to next year.
Yeah.
And baseball is one of those sports, but I also am not going to be one of those people who are like, this is the only time it's going to happen. There's just way too much talent. There's way too much success. The Brewers have a lot going.
Yeah, it's
them.
Very much different than 2011, where 2011 it was kind of we pushed our chips into the proverbial
Prince
table.
Prince Fielder was gone.
Prince Fielder, we gave him a standing ovation in Game 6 that year against the Cardinals. So was I. And I knew that, you know, we all kind of knew he was gone.
Yep.
Greinke was an all-in type of move. You had him for next year just to get something for him, basically, when it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Sean Markham was trash in the playoffs.
And a drunk. People forget
that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things where it was just kind of, this was it. And now the Brewers are in an opposite situation where you'd like to think they have, probably two full years yet here but like you said, you don't know if you can get a game away from the World Series again.
Yeah, that's baseball. But that's literally it for every year. The NL's way more open though than the American League. You don't have the Astros, Red Sox, Yankees. You have the Dodgers, sure the Cubs. The Braves are going to keep getting better.
We have to keep moving too, but that makes me think of, cuz I've been trying to think, the 2008 Rays were not the last, but the one that stuck out to me, like as a small market team.
Yeah, the Royals.
The Royals were, I guess, a more recent example.
2015, yeah.
Where, you know, because I was thinking, like, how come the Rays never got back? And then I realized they play in the fucking American League East, which is, you know, murderer's row because, you know, then Toronto got good. And, like, it just was.
And the NL Central is tough. I mean, no question about it. And the Reds are going to get better. And you're going to see the Cardinals and Cubs. But, yeah, no, it'll be a fight, but at least you have it. And also, too, the last point that I'll add, and then we'll move on, is you didn't have the fifth wild card. So that fifth wild card pays off huge dividends.
True. That's going to do it for the 2018 recap. Thanks to everyone who has listened in the year 2018 to the Tapping the Keg series of podcasts. We not only have Tapping the Keg you hear each and every week with myself and Charlie. Also, he does the Daily Tap. I've filled in occasionally. And again, thank you for everybody. To everybody who listens and makes this possible, keep listening and we'll see you in 2019. Shut it down! Let's go home!